senior technology leaders in the government exited in unusually large numbers in 2014. The reason for the CIO exodus is not entirely clear. Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller is here to give us a preview of his special report, CIOs on the Move, and we'll get the whole breakdown tomorrow. Looking forward to it greatly. This started as, at the beginning of your work on this report, you and I had a conversation in the newsroom about the just kind of the anecdotal trend that we saw. This person was leaving and that person was leaving. And I don't remember the names that drove this conversation, Jason, but this is something that has been in the works for a while. What kind of research did you do on the specifics and what did you find?
You know, it's funny. It all started because of my reporter's notebook, where I really enjoy, if you haven't noticed, talking about the people of the federal government.
Yes.
I think people enjoy people news. And I just would, oh, so-and-so's leaving as the CIO. I write that down, put it in my notebook, right? And over the time, I just kept thinking, wow, there's so many CIOs. And I included in this research not just people with the title CIOs, but senior IT leaders. So someone like Todd Park, who is the chief technology officer, or Dave McClure, who left from GSA, who is the associate administrator for the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies. I included them in this research because they have a huge role mm-hmm. in this IT community that we cover, that we spend a lot of time in. And long story short is, about 3 or 4 months ago, I sat down and actually put together that. I went through all the old stories we've done, did other research, checked in with friends around the CIO Council and said, who am I missing? Who did I forget? And it was just astonishing. So what I came up with was 23 different CIOs, major deputy CIOs, as well as senior IT leaders left. And I kept this from November of 2013. Until October of 2014. So a full 12 months, but not a year per se. And the numbers are just astonishing. Now, people have said to me when I've talked about this story to people in the federal IT community, well, how does that compare to last year? And what about the year before that? Mm-hmm. And what about the year before that? And the answer is, I don't know. And that's one of the things that stood out to me is that I've been covering this community now for about 15 years. And I just never remember a time when we wrote so many CIOs exiting stories. And that's why I think I decided to go down this path and really put the list together. I think once you see this timeline that Mike O'Connell put together on our staff, it's going to be, you'll be blown away.
I do love the graphic work that he does, and that'll be up tomorrow on federalnewsradio.com.
Tomorrow morning.
Yep. Excellent. Look forward to seeing that. You're right. And as you were talking about that breakdown, that's what occurred to me in your response to that question, how does this compare to before? Obviously not well enough that we've thought about it before. I mean, this is the first time in the probably decade or so that I've been covering the executive branch where it's occurred to me, let alone occurred to you, that, wow, this seems like an awful lot of people in very high level, very important IT roles that are deciding their time in government has come and gone.
Right. Now, when you look back at what the Government Accountability Office did in terms of this type of research, their last time they looked at CIO tenure was 2011. And we're going to have a link to that GAO report on federalnewsradio.com tomorrow morning so people can see what they found back, almost four years ago now. And they didn't look at specific tenure of agencies. They grouped it from 2004 to 2011. How many CIOs did Agency X have or Agency Y have? But they didn't necessarily break it down that this person was in there for 6 months or 8 months or 4 years or 2 years. They did say the average tenure at that time, again, 2004 to 2011, was just over 2 years, 25 months. And a political appointee, the average time for a CIO was actually much less. And that's a fascinating look, too. But since 2011, we really haven't done any, there hasn't been any new research by GAO or the IGs on CIO tenure. So historically, it's hard to say, again, was 2014 an anomaly or was it the way it always has been and we just noticed?
The next thing I'm curious about, and this is like a Hollywood awards ceremony where, you might leave out one of the most important people, and I apologize in advance if we've done that, but who are some of the big names and some of the big jobs that have left and jobs that have come open in the past year?
Well, I think you got to start with Steve Van Roekel, the federal CIO. He's at the top of that list there. Obviously, he was in place for about 3 years. He left in September of 2014. His replacement, unknown. So that's an open position. Terry Takai, another big one, the Defense Department CIO. Terry Halverson has been acting, but no permanent CIO. And now with the Defense Authorization Bill change, that CIO position is going to change again. It's going to be merged with the Chief Management Officer. So obviously you have an acting, but you still have a permanent that's opening. Other ones that have been filled, the Justice Department, obviously Joe Klimovich moved over there from NOAA. His old position, as far as I know, has still not been filled. Rob Carey, who was a deputy CIO at DOD, he left back in March of 2014. His position as principal deputy, he has a long title, yes, still has not been filled. Another one I point to, Robin East, Treasury Department. She was there for 3 years. She retired. It was only filled, you know, about September, October time frame. Sonny Bagawalia came back from Hawaii to take that role.
That's one move. With all due respect to Sonny, who I like, I don't understand that, why you leave Hawaii and come back to Washington once you got that gig.
Well, you know, so sometimes home is where the heart is.
I understand.
You know, the only paradise so much. A recent one that just got filled was the Defense Information Intelligence Agency, DIA. Grant Schneider was there 7 years, one of the longest tenured CIOs, and he was just replaced by his old deputy, Janice Glover-Jones, who was on a recent program we had, Women of Washington had her on.
And you have the archive of that program and all the Women of Washington shows at federalnewsradio.com. You mentioned some of the historical facts that we have about CIO tenure. How does that compare some of what you found here and what the Government Accountability Office found with other data that's out there about this subject?
The first thing that stands out to me is the longevity of these CIOs. Again, of these 23 CIOs and senior level IT officials, again, I think GAO just look at the people with the title CIO, but you know, 96 total years of experience went out the door, or at least moved within the government. Average tenure, this is what's the most impressive, 4.2 years. So CIOs are staying longer compared to the historical average of, they always talked about 18 to 24 months. GAO found 25 months is their average when they looked at it from 2004 to 2011. So I think the fact that people are staying longer is actually a really good sign in many regards. And that's why I think that this story in itself is not about the fact that people are leaving and look how bad everything is and oh, you know, woe is me, we didn't get a pay raise. But I think this story has some of those positive remarks too, that, hey, we like our job. We are making progress. We feel good about coming to work every day. And I think so just that average tenure is what really stands out to me.
What else can we expect? What are some of the other themes of what you'll present to us tomorrow, Jason?
A couple other things that stood out during my research is how important succession planning is. The CIOs who are keeping their agencies in good shape do a really good job with succession planning. Other agencies who maybe, you know, haven't filled their roles or their CIO roles, or, you know, that becomes such an important piece to CIOs as they move on. The other piece is I talked to several former CIOs on background because, you know, they wanted to be a little more candid. And the support from OMB, I'll just tell you, there's a lot of candid comments about the support from OMB.
We'll look forward to that report on federalnewsradio.com, and it debuts on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin tomorrow morning. If you miss that report, I'll have it again tomorrow afternoon.
We also have a column from Bob Woods, a longtime federal IT executive, a longtime consultant in the commercial world. And he talks about, you know, the title of his column. I'll give you the little tease there, too. CIO, Chief Information Officer, or Career is Over. There you go.
Bob doesn't pull punches, and I'll look forward to that. And see if he can come on the program sometime in the next couple of days.
I'm sure he'd love it.
Talk about that work. Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller is here. Originally, when you were going to come on the program this afternoon, I wanted you to talk about a story that you have up now on federalnewsradio.com. The headline is GSA now in charge of .gov domain policy and issuance. I moderated a panel at the National Academy of Public Administration back in, November or something like that.
They all run together, don't they?
And Dan Tangerlini talked at that event about how GSA, one of his goals was for GSA to provide more of an infrastructure, a base for agencies to work from to improve their operations and not just be a provider of stuff, products and services, or be agencies' conduits to those products and services. Is it fair for me to take away from your piece on federalnewsradio.com that this is another step toward that as they take over this .gov domain policy and issuance?
Well, for many years, GSA has been kind of the leader in that area. This is not necessarily a new role for GSA. Where this is new is this is reasserting the Office of Government-Wide Policy, OGP's, play into this broader, this IT world, this idea of policy and issuance, meaning, hey, I want a new website. Okay, tell me about why you need it. Where is it going to live? How? What do you already have that's out there? And asking those type of questions. I mean, right in their name, government-wide policy, mm-hmm. they got away from that role for the last several years. And I think this is part of them coming back into it. The other thing about this is very interesting is OMB has been trying to get a hold of agency websites, meaning reduce the number, make them simpler, make them more consistent. And, you know, from what I can tell, is it's hard to say if how successful they've been. The 18F organization, their big, you know, innovation lab, if you will, they recently put up online all the federal.gov domains, a whole list, and found that there were still more than 1,300 of them that existed today. This is down from either 2,000 back when OMB initially released a memo in 2011, or when this .gov reform task force released a report and found 1,400 domains. So it's either they're down by a few hundred or they're only down by 100.
The that number, the numbers involved here are pretty impressive, but kind of staggering at the same time. I think it's impressive that 18F has been able to quantify this. I mean, this is an issue that it seems we've been chasing for a long time, and it's almost like the data center issue.
Yeah.
We think we have a handle on it, and then we see some over here, and does this count as this, all of these kinds of things. So for them to have a definitive handle on this, I think, is really impressive. The 1,300 number that still exists, though, is... wow, that was my response to that, is that's still an awful lot.
Well, remember, there's 111 federal agencies, and this is not just, you know, the Department of Defense or the Agriculture Department, but this is, you know, the Maritime, you know, Museum.
Yes,
this
whole,
is
everybody.
JFK, whatever. You know, these are very small agencies that still have a website, so they are one more to it, and they could have more than one website or more than one subdomain within their, you know, si.edu type of website. So I'm not sure 1,300 is a huge amount, but I think that they're more concerned about consistency and standardization to make sure they're meeting certain goals. And that's why I think that OMB laid out these new requirements that agencies are going to have to follow as they update or get new websites.
You report 7 requirements for new .gov sites, 8 standards for all existing .gov domains and all future .gov domains too. Anything jumps out at us, anything that we should call attention to among these?
You know, most of these are pretty standard, you know, Section 508 accessibility standards, you know, make sure that they have cybersecurity, continuous monitoring, and IPv6. But the one I'll point to that I think is really fascinating is GSA's and OMB are telling agencies to employ the web analytics provided by GSA's digital analytics program. This is something that was developed as part of the digital government strategy. You don't hear too much about it. A little bit leaks out here and a little bit leaks out there. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a program maybe to watch and see what they can do with those analytics going forward.
Excellent reports. Looking forward to your CIO departure story tomorrow on Federal News Radio 1500 at AM and federalnewsradio.com. Thank you very much, my friend.
Always a pleasure.